Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Matt Gaetz and Professor Dershowitz join us to talk about Trump indictment, Trump 2024, and the parents' rights bill in education. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com, and get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by my friends, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage, 888-888-1172 or andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Matt Gaetz. Matt, welcome to the program.
Matt, hey, thanks, Charlie.
It seems as if Donald Trump is stronger than any time in recent memory in the Republican primary. Do you agree? And if so, what do you attribute that to?
Well, certainly the Trump movement is ascendant. And I think there is, frankly, a new focus and energy in the Trump campaign because of these threats of prosecution that seem to be advancing unconstitutionally and really at great harm to our nation. I wish they weren't advancing. But what Donald Trump has always had as a superpower is that he's always been able to turn the efforts against him into a way of exposing some deep corruption or malady in the system that has been structurally weaponized against the American people for a long time. No one ever really questioned the intelligence community until the Russia hoax. And now, even today, we ask more serious questions and we're all the better for it as a nation. I think in this case, now we're starting to see how the criminal justice system has fused with politics. And while Trump is the target now, we saw people in the January 6th investigations who were the target of that. We saw parents targeted by a weaponized Justice Department. You know, you had Merrick Garland's son outselling critical race theory pedagogy, and then Merrick Garland using the Justice Department to try to intimidate and deter parents who showed up to school board meetings to complain about critical race theory. What a corrupt little ecosystem it was. Now, I think there's going to be great congressional focus, great oversight focus, really focus from the American people in the dangers of using the criminal justice system in such a perverse way. And there was far more energy in Waco, Texas, than even the Trump campaign expected. The only criticism is they probably should have had the press risers back another few football fields because there was at least 15,000 people that were behind the press cameras who had shown up from every corner of Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, really all over the country because they're ready to get the band back together for the Trump campaign.
Sure looks that way. Let's play cut 11. This is you speaking at the Trump campaign rally, play cut 11.
You saw how they've advanced these persecutions and prosecutions against President Trump. And what I can tell you is they're coming for you next. And the so-called experts who told me to hide, resign, the ones that told Donald Trump not to run again, they don't care about you. They want to return to the old ways of the Romneys and the McConnells. Well, guess what? This is Donald Trump's party, and I'm a Donald Trump Republican.
So, Matt, the only question I have for you is let's talk about someone like Lady Graham, right, who endorsed Donald Trump. That bothered me. Why is Donald Trump allowing Lindsey Graham in the kind of core center of his campaign? Because he's going to win the nomination, right? And then all these other kind of fringe moderate Republicans are going to try to get in his good graces. How should he handle that?
Well, I don't believe that President Trump's proximity to Lindsey Graham makes President Trump any more like Lindsey Graham. I've been in the company of both men at Mar-a-Lago where President Trump will berate Lindsey Graham over his views on foreign policy or other things. And then sometimes Lindsey will give it right back to him. I think they have a personal friendship. I think that's largely why there is this early endorsement from Senator Graham. They obviously have serious policy disagreements, but look, politicians, the game of addition, not subtraction and division.
Yeah, so but I mean, like, was it addition to have John Bolton in the White House?
Well, I don't believe John Bolton made a single substantive decision in the White House. I believe Donald Trump paraded him around like a mascot.
Yeah, but then he wrote a book and leaked on him. And it's just, you get what I'm saying? At some point, you got to draw the line, right? You got to have the wall built and say, like, go endorse some other neocon, right? That's one of my few concerns is people that are totally against the MAGA agenda flattering President Trump to try to co-opt our movement. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't think we can. I think there are better mitigation tactics to use there than to say, don't endorse us, go vote for somebody else. I think the better mitigation tactic is to draw from the experiences that we've had where far too many people got into the Trump administration that weren't for President Trump's policies. I think that at the Justice Department, it was a real parade of horribles regarding who we had there. I think that at Secretary of State Tillerson oftentimes would work to frustrate President Trump's agenda. Secretary Mattis would stand in the way of orders that Trump would give. So look, we're going to be better at HR the second time around than the first time. And one thing I heard from a lot of people at the Waco rally is that they appreciated that. They would say, look, we like DeSantis, but gosh, he's not going to go into Washington knowing in advance who's going to screw him over the way President Trump has had this experience, can draw on this experience, and can certainly get us going in the right direction a lot quicker.
Okay, so you voted also against the Republican Parents' Bill of Rights. Tell us why.
Because the federal government has no role in education. Don't get me started on this, Charlie. I am so frustrated that we seem to be throwing the Constitution out the window and our semblance of federalism with the belief that we're going to make the United States Congress America's school board. You may like what's in the Parents' Bill of Rights now, but when Democrats take over, there's going to be, you know, the right to have gender blockers delivered by the school nurse to your kid, the right for your kid to go to a place where gun violence isn't glorified. So any other parent that wants to coach the ball team or be a room mom that wears a Second Amendment shirt is going to be deemed a domestic terrorist. Look, what works is what we saw work from Loudoun County, Virginia, to Florida, to all over this country. When parents woke up to what was going on in the classroom, they went and flipped school boards. You should not have to flip the entire United States Congress over education policy. So I'm not for any bill, regardless of how well-meaning it seems. If it grows the Department of Education, I would abolish the federal Department of Education and block grant every dollar to the states. And you know what, Charlie, the last time Republicans did this, it was the No Child Left Behind bill. And we were going to have usher in this new era of accountability with a stronger Department of Education. And you know what it ended up doing? It ended up addicting our states and local school districts so much to the federal dollar that then they had to absorb the very delivery system of wokeism that people are now complaining about. That's why I voted no.
I agree in principle, but in reality, the Department of Education is here to stay in the short term. Would it make more sense to get, I mean, the bill's basically transparency, right? You have to tell parents what's being taught. If you receive, it's actually a way to use federal money to at least empower parents, right?
No, I think that when you get the Congress defining any feature of the relationship between school boards and parents, you have totally screwed the pooch. That is what got us into this trouble in the first place. You know when education worked really well? When it was largely done by churches and community groups and you had the schoolhouse and parents were directly engaged. And I grant your premise that we're not going back to that, but why is it that Republicans just accept that the Department of Education has to exist forever? If we had any guts, we would stand with the school choice movement, which is very
biased.
We would go find all the mothers who want their kids out of failing schools, and we should block rent this state, and then the voters can hold their states
in school. With Biden, it's not going to happen. The way I look at the bill, which is why I support it, is that it's a way to get some ammunition to the parents' party on the front lines. Is that
they're getting the ammunition now? They show up to school.
Well, no, hold on a second. No. You got that woman. You got that woman in Rhode Island who wasn't even allowed to see curriculum, right? It's an interesting question. If you have a federalized system, shouldn't you at least then have some provisions that empower the citizen? Because we have the worst of both worlds. We have a massive Leviathan education system and no parents' rights. And so I guess what the spirit of the bill is trying to do, and I read it, it's not like no teeth, Matt. This is not exactly, you know.
Well, that's hardly a defense of the bill.
Well,
right?
No,
if
but
we're going to do something, let's have it actually have teeth. And by the way,
but that's not the point. The point is that the bill exists, right? And the bill says that a parent should be able to see it. So if it receives federal money and you currently don't have those provisions, it's actually using the federal money to empower the parent.
Well, I would suggest that there is a better way to solve that problem than an action by the United States Congress. I was in the state legislature. My dad was on my local school board.
What about the parent in New York?
Well, the parent in New York has to fix the government there.
Okay. You and I both know that's not going
to
happen.
Charlie, that's not an acceptable outcome to say that because we don't like the way people are treated in blue cities and states, that we're just going to throw the 10th Amendment out the window and say that we're going to federalize every decision.
You could make the argument this actually empowers it. I see it both ways. I mean, I get from principle, I'd love to abolish the Department of Education and all that. At the same time, you have parents, especially in blue states, that have no rights whatsoever. California, Oregon, Washington, they don't have rights to look into curriculum. They don't have rights to do any of it.
But that's what they said about Loudoun County. They said Loudoun County was just insufferably blue, and it was so blue for even Virginia could never go red. And we saw the way that these issues can flip the political dynamic.
That's true, but you and I both know that
continuing to empower the federal government actually lashes us to that failure that would actually be
I think that's a good point, but I think also honestly Virginia is a lot more of a battleground state purple than California, but I understand the spirit of it.
And Loudoun County was pretty blue.
Loudoun, but I mean state only changed because they were able to get Youngkin into the governor's mansion.
But they changed the school boards
in a lot
of these places.
They did. Have they actually effectuated any change is a separate issue.
If the Republican leadership in the House thinks that they're going to use our time here to have the federal government hire local police, rate local DAs, get involved in decisions at local school boards, they're going to have to do that without my vote. Just because we won one half of one third of the government doesn't to me mean we should abandon theories of federalism and constitutional protection and really empowering those who make the decisions closest to the people. I think that's true populism. True populism is giving the people more access through the folks that they see at the local diner and at church on Sunday rather than folks who are in Washington, D.C.
I see it both ways. And so we'll move on to the next topic. I think that's a fair analysis. With play cut 17, this is Governor DeSantis in a debate to become Florida's governor. This back from 2018, if I think. Play 17, please.
So here's the issue, and I deal with this all the time. In Washington, in the country, Trump has almost the entire media against him. Fake news day after day after day. He's got the entire Democratic Party after him. He's got the lobbyists after him. He's got the bureaucracy after him. And he's got some Republicans who come after him to kneecap him. And so he is under an attack like no president has faced. And he is standing tall for us. He is working hard. So the last thing I want to do is go out there and lob hand grenades at the president. I think we need to support the president, understand what he's up against, and understand he's facing opposition unlike any other president we've seen.
Matt Gaetz, do you think Ron DeSantis missed an opportunity the last week and a half?
I do. You're getting me nostalgic, Charlie. 2018 DeSantis was such a classic vintage. Ron DeSantis wrote in his book that he doesn't believe it was Donald Trump's endorsement that got him through that primary. It was his performance in the debates. And having been Ron DeSantis's debate coach for that debate, I went and looked at what the substance of the debate largely entailed. And it was Ron DeSantis over and over correctly and effectively making the argument that the attacks on Donald Trump are unprecedented and that Donald Trump really required those of us with talent and capability to come to his side, to be at defending him as he worked to defend the American people from the corrupt apparatus that is often weaponized against them. That was in 2018. Look at where we are now. They're literally trying to have President Trump do a perp walk, and they're trying to manufacture a felony charge by lashing together a novel legal theory in Manhattan, of all places. To me, the pressures that President Trump faces are far more extreme today than they were in 2018. And I would invite my friend, the governor of Florida, someone who I admire a great deal, to join me in supporting President Trump. He did such a great job defending President Trump during the Russia hoax. And ambition, personal ambition for the presidency, shouldn't be the sole thing that causes one to reorient their viewpoint if that was the viewpoint held to secure the Republican nomination for the governorship.
Other candidates, I mean, it seems as if it's really kind of – it's Trump's right now and he's gaining steam. Nikki Haley's running. We might hear from Pompeo and others. I don't see any constituency. Do you, Matt? 45 seconds remaining.
Well, look, I think that there are going to be other entrants in the race. I think that Nikki Haley's views on foreign policy are particularly out of touch with where most voters are. She thinks that we ought to go kicking all of America's bullies with heels, but she seems to be wanting to kick everyone behind every sand dune in the Middle East to start a new war. That's just not where Republicans are today. It's not the America First policy. So I think President Trump is gaining momentum, and it's an exciting movement to be a part of, no doubt.
Very good. Matt, thank you so much. Honor to have you as always. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Breathe some life into your own backyard with FastGrowingTrees.com this spring. From shade to fresh fruit to privacy and natural beauty, let FastGrowingTrees.com help you plant your dream garden with their expert advice and fast, reliable shipping. In the book Comfort Crisis that we covered last year that won my 2022 Book of the Year, author Michael Easter talks about having live plants can actually decrease depression, decrease anxiety, and increase serotonin, happiness, and dopamine. I love fast-growing trees because I have found having live trees around makes me happier and closer in touch with nature. With fast-growing trees, you get a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. You know everything will look great and fresh out of the box. Join over 1.5 million, can you believe it? Happy fast-growing tree customers. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk to get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk. That is fastgrowingtrees.com/Kirk. Terrible situation unfolding in Nashville. Our prayers are there. We're keeping an eye on that. It seems as if 7 people are dead, including a female shooter, which is unusual in situations like this. And so we'll find more as we go along. Joining us now is Professor Dershowitz, author of the new book, Get Trump. Professor, welcome back to the program. We had such a good conversation last week. The audience wanted more of it. And so, Professor, when we were talking last week and your book just came out, we thought that Donald Trump would be indicted by now. What has changed? What is the new development? Is the DA blinking?
I think he's blinking. I hope that the book, Get Trump, may have something to do with it. It's become an Amazon bestseller. A lot of people are reading it. And it makes a strong argument against the kinds of targeting that has been done by the New York DA and the New York Attorney General. You know, the title of my book, Get Trump, is not original with me. I wish I could get credit for it. I can't take credit for it. It comes from the campaign pledge that the Attorney General and the District Attorney of New York made. They both promised that if they got elected, they would get Trump. So the way it worked is, they campaigned to get Trump. If they don't get Trump, they won't get reelected. And then after they campaigned and won on Get Trump, they had to figure out what to get him on. They didn't know what to get him on originally. So they rummaged through all the statute books and they couldn't find anything. Mm-hmm. They found out it had been a federal charge, but the federal government didn't pursue it. That earlier on, the District Attorney of New York looked at a charge. He didn't pursue it. Even Bragg himself decided not to pursue it. But then the pressures got too great and they decided that if a person pays money in a non-disclosure agreement, non-disclosure, he then has to indicate that it was a non-disclosure agreement on his corporate forms in order to prevent his wife from learning about an adulterous affair. Now, nobody would ever sign a non-disclosure agreement with anybody if they knew they had to list it on an open corporate form. So it's the craziest misdemeanor ever, and it's beyond the 2-year statute of limitations. And then to compound it, they wanted to make a felony and they couldn't find a state felony. So they had to go to a federal felony, which was never charged by the federal government. And they had to try to prove that the only thing in Donald Trump's mind, if he did, allowed the $130,000 to be paid, the only thing was his campaign for president. He wasn't interested in all his wife, his family, his business, et cetera. That's just too... it's a bridge too far. It won't work. And then you have to rely on Michael Cohen. What reasonable prosecutor could ever look the jury in the eye and say, I believe this man, Michael Cohen, is telling the truth? He didn't tell the truth to his lawyer. He didn't tell the truth to the federal government. He didn't tell the truth to Congress. He didn't tell the truth to the Federal Election Commission. But now suddenly something happened. Some angel came down from heaven and turned him into a truth teller. No prosecutor would believe that. And prosecutors are not allowed to put on witnesses who they suspect reasonably might be lying.
So, Professor, I want to dive deeper into this, but one of the things that I'm concerned about, and it's the old you know, saying that the process is the punishment. Even if Donald Trump is not indicted in any of these cases, he's already had to spend a lot on legal fees. He's had reputational damage. I mean, you've been doing this for many decades, and I know you talk about this in the book, Get Trump. How do we reform that? Is there a way to speed it up? Because if you're allowed to investigate somebody for 6 or 7 years, that is almost a soft jail sentence, at least reputationally. How do we go about fixing that?
Well, first of all, you apply statutes of limitations. You make sure that a statute of limitations is enforced. The New York courts have made a mockery of the statute of limitations. What they said, the New York courts have said, the statute says you have to be continuously out of New York. That has a meaning. But the New York Court of Appeals said, no. If you're in New York, even out of New York for a day, that counts. You have to add up the days you were out of New York. So enforce the statutes of limitations. Don't allow stale prosecutions. Demand speedy trials. And then make the government pay you back. If they lose, make the government compensate you for your legal fees, for your lost time, etc. That is a very, very common thing. I've had that happen to me. I was falsely charged with, not criminally, obviously, but in a lawsuit, falsely charged by a woman who said I had sex with her. And she admitted after years that she may have confused me with somebody else. I had to spend close to $2 million in legal fees to get to the truth. And my insurance went up. My wife and my children were attacked just by a false accusation. And there's no compensation for it. And it just encourages people to make false allegations and accusations because they benefit. And the person who's accused loses, even if in the end the accuser admits that she may have confused me with someone else. That never goes away, that charge. And so I sympathize with Donald Trump greatly, just as I sympathize with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, who has been, in my view, falsely accused of crimes in order to try to get him out of office. So there are some comparisons between the headlines that are being made in Israel as we speak and the headlines that are not being made in New York by the absence of an indictment. Now, you know, I hope the indictment will never come. I hope that the grand jurors will look prosecutor in the eye and say, you know, you tried to put the wool over our eyes. You didn't present Cohen's lawyer. He had to come and volunteer. You kept 300 emails from us, and you didn't tell us about Cohen's history of lying. We're going to stand up to you, and we're going to do what the founders of the Constitution intended when they had a grand jury. We're going to be an independent body to protect the rights of defendants, not the handmaiden of the prosecution that will indict a ham sandwich.
Your next book should be called Get Bibi. Educate our audience, Professor, on what's going on in Israel. It's a little bit confusing for those of us that don't track Israeli politics. And it seems today Bibi has come out and said, we're going to suspend these judicial reforms till the summer. We don't want a civil war. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm very close to Bibi. I've been close to him 50 years. I've also been close to the man who was the Chief Justice of Israel, Aaron Barak. So I see virtues on both sides. What happened is the Supreme Court took a lot of power, a lot of authority, much more than the United States Supreme Court. And professors and others and people on the right and people on the left all agree that maybe they had too much power. But then it became a political issue and both sides overstated their claims. So the Netanyahu side said we have to completely change the Supreme Court. Anything that they do can be overridden by Knesset, much too far. And we want to make sure that the justices are appointed by politicians, much too far. I've offered compromises. I suspect that there'll be compromises. When I was in Israel a few months ago, I met with Bibi Netanyahu for quite a while, and he talked about trying to achieve balance. This issue has gone to the streets. And, you know, there's a little bit of an election denial going on in Israel, too. There are some people who don't think the election was legitimate. If that reminds you of things that went on in the United States, okay. But it's a mess. But I think Bibi has done the right thing today by putting a halt on this until after. Remember, Israel is celebrating its 75th birthday starting at the end of this month. And that, you know, would be spoiled if there were still demonstrations. So I would hope that Israel could celebrate Passover, Easter, Ramadan. It's 75th birthday. Let cooler minds prevail and let a compromise be achieved. I hope that could happen.
Would it be an over-exaggeration to say they were on the precipice of civil war? That's something that Netanyahu repeated today.
No, I don't think so. I think they were on the precipice of civil disobedience. civil war is more than that. I don't think people are going to be taking up arms against people on the other side. Remember, Israel has the strongest check and balance of any country in the world. It's called elections. They seem to have them every 6 months. If there's any check and balance on authoritarianism or tyranny, it's having elections all the time. Mm-hmm. And that Israel has. It has elections. That's the ultimate form of check and balance, more important than a Supreme Court, more important than two houses of the legislature, elections. And I predict there'll probably be another election within the next couple of years.
So just kind of going back to Trump here domestically as we wrap up, Professor, the other investigations, what are we seeing or hearing in the Georgia investigation? They've gone kind of quiet.
It's going nowhere. There's a tape recording. We've all heard it. The president says, I need to find 13,000 votes. Look it up in the dictionary. Find means that something is there, but it hasn't been counted or it hasn't been seen or it hasn't been found. So he didn't say make up 13,000 votes, concoct, manufacture. He said find existing votes that were not counted. That is a perfectly legitimate request and not a crime. So I don't think George is going anywhere. I don't think January 6th is going anywhere. After all, when the January 6th committee presented to the American people this January 6th speech, which I didn't approve of personally, but they doctored the tape. They took out the words, I want you to protest peacefully and patriotically. They didn't want those words to be used, and those words invoke the First Amendment. Having said those words, everything he said in the rest of the speech is protected by the First Amendment. So that case is going nowhere. The only case that has any legs legally is the classified material case, but that's going nowhere politically because they're not going to indict former President Trump without also indicting Pence and Biden, who also had classified material. So I don't think any of these four cases are going anywhere, but the Bragg case in New York is by far the weakest legally, factually, and politically.
And I think if there was kind of a grand strategy to, quote unquote, get Trump and there was a central war room, they messed it up because Bragg leading the way he did. Just any thoughts on that, Professor, how this kind of just really changed people's opinion about how this is a campaign to get Trump?
Oh, this has backfired completely. And I think as I spoke to Donald Trump the other day on the phone, and I said, you should invest in T-shirts that have your mugshot on it. That will be the biggest selling T-shirt in American history if they actually take a mugshot of you and that becomes part of a T-shirt and a poster. And that would be his campaign poster. His campaign would be a picture of him in a mugshot. So I think it's backfired.
That's funny. Professor, great book. Check it out. Get Trump. We're going to have you on as things continue.
Donald Trump endorsed the book. I just have to read you what he said. It was very funny. He said, Alan enjoys saying I didn't vote for Trump. I believe he probably did. He just used that phrase for added credibility. But it doesn't matter. He's a brilliant guy who wrote a very important and special book. It's called Get Trump. So get Trump.
That sounds like President Trump. So,
right.
Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Look, it is time to consider a rollover of that 401k into an IRA. The investment world is completely different in 2023, and you cannot do the same thing as last year. Woke companies are aggressively implementing ESG. Interest rates are going up and inflation is still lingering. If you have over $150,000, now is the time to move your money to a biblical responsible investing strategy with my friends at Pax Financial Group. Here's how you can connect with Pax. Text Charlie to the number 74868. That's it. Just take out your phone. Text Charlie, Charlie, to 74868. So take out your phone. Text Charlie to the number 74868 for biblical responsible investing. Text Charlie to 74868. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Someone says, Charlie, what is woke? How about this? California just crowns first man as Miss San Francisco. So a man has just won Miss San Francisco, who is wearing woman face and appropriated in that way. You know, I asked the question last week I said, why is it that women get angry at a lot of things? Not all women, but they get angry at Trump. They get angry at their husbands. They get angry. But they don't get angry about men who want to be women. They're perfectly okay with that. And we got a lot of emails in return saying, Charlie, because they're not a threat to us, they're actually some of the nicest people. Wow, that's really strange and bizarre. It just kind of an open-ended question. Anyway, so let's go to this here. It's Representative Stacey Plankett on MSNBC. This is their argument about the woke. Remember, the way that woke can be easily defined is call everything racist till you control it. Whatever works, whatever is structurally proven in the Western society, we must disassemble it. And there is a tyrannical, totalitarian element in the woke. Play cut 13.
The whole discussion about woke is really a dog whistle against African-American, against Black people, against people of color. The things that they are deeming as woke are the things that are trying to make us a more inclusive country. They want us to continue in fear and in anger towards each other so that they can take advantage of that.
You know what's really interesting is that the actual people pushing the woke, though, are not Black people. It's white liberals. It's almost uniquely white liberals that are pushing these awful ideas. Again, it is a academic religion that is filling the void of the decline of Christianity and the decline of regular mainstream religion. They have to fill it with something. And the way they're trying to fill it is with these pagan anti-racist religions. Fox reports that elite universities are now charging thousands of dollars for politically charged DEI certificates. Play cut 14.
Elite American universities are now charging thousands of dollars for politically charged diversity, equity, and inclusion certificates. Yep, one of those is Stanford University, where a federal judge is speaking out after being shouted down by a woke mob while speaking at their law school.
So you can now, for thousands of dollars, this is very similar to the selling of indulgences before Martin Luther. This is the selling of indulgences. For thousands of dollars, you can get a certificate in the religion of anti-racism that you're able to enter into the eternal life of wokeism if you just pay some money. We'll let you into the club. These people are such grifters. The intentional racial and gender identity divisions are implemented by the elite, not by the proletariat, not by the working people, but by the elite, creating an America that hates itself and roots for its own failure. These are the commissars of wokeness. The French Revolution had Jacobins. Mao Zedong had the Red Guard. These are the commissars. These are the wokies, as we call them, enforcing the party orthodoxy. And one of the ways you can make America great again and you could restore the country is you must defund DEI everywhere. If your college has a diversity, equity, inclusion department, you must demand it be defunded immediately. And they're using all these different forces to try to break your will, to try to break your spirit. Do not let them. President Trump identified this correctly. This is the right message. The media is going to go after him, but he's saying that actually our biggest threats are from within. He's right. You can go even deeper on this. Play cut 10.
Our biggest threat are high-level politicians that work in the United States government, like Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Schumer, Biden, Justice Department, because that's poisoning our country.
Poisoning our country. That is exactly right. It is arsenic on the republic. And he's right. The way you get rid of the woke is you must defund it and you repeal the laws that enable it. It's not a fact of existence. It's a creation of our policies and our laws and our willingness to be implemented. By the way, Disney has just let off 7,000 employees. I feel sorry for those people that are no longer going to get a paycheck. But that's a good thing that Disney is now experiencing those pesky shackles of reality. Disney, by the way, that also owns ESPN, that is honoring men in Women's History Month. Thomas. NPR just laid off 10% of its workforce. Facebook, Amazon. There is finally a price to being woke, and we must make these companies suffer. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.